From the heart of the Forest City, this is the Craig Needles Podcast, brought to you by Lexus of London. Now here's your host, Craig Needles.
It's the Craig Needles Podcast here at londonnewstoday.ca, classicrock981.com, and on your favorite podcast app. And today, we're going to break down election for the last time before we go vote. Tomorrow's podcast, it's not going to be election stuff. So if you haven't voted yet, you're going to go vote tomorrow. You're going to get some non-election content on tomorrow's podcast. But today, I want to break down some of the narratives of the race. I want to give you some predictions. And I want to tell you about some things that have bugged me, or not bugged me, during the campaign. I should let you know that Kelly Elliott, the deputy mayor, Tem Center, is going to come up in a little bit. We mentioned some narratives in the race that have bugged me. One of them is, people from the sticks, rural people, hicks, are going to re-elect Doug Ford. That's not it, friends. That is not it. And to underscore that point, and this is where I'm going to start. This is where I think the election has been won and lost. And I will tell you right now, this is not a new revelation for an election in this province or in this country. But this election's being won or lost in the 905. I'm going to read you some numbers. Out of the 116 ridings that are contested both federally and provincially, where the boundaries are the same, Northern Ontario, things get a little bit different as far as riding boundaries and whatnot, but there are 116 ridings where the boundaries are the same in the province of Ontario. 41 of them elected a Trudeau conservative this past, Trudeau liberal rather, this past fall. In the 2021 election. And then, before that, in the 2018 election, elected a Ford progressive conservative. I suspect that number stays at the very least in the high 40, in the high 30s, and maybe stays at 40 or 41. The Ford conservatives are not in danger of losing many ridings. Just a small handful that they won in 2018. So that is an interesting number, and that tells you what's going on here, that there are a lot of voters, especially in the 905. I'm going to read you the names of some ridings that were blue provincially and red federally. There are a lot of voters in those places that like Justin Trudeau and they like Doug Ford. Here's the name of some ridings that apply to this. Brampton South, Brampton West, Mississauga Center, Mississauga Erin Mills, Mississauga Lakeshore, Mississauga Streetville, Oakville, Oakville North, Burlington. Would you like some more? I can do that. Etobicoke Center, Etobicoke Lakeshore, Etobicoke North. Doug Ford's member of parliament federally is a liberal. York Center, Willowdale. All right. That's the way this goes. That the liberals have won these ridings in these major urban centers, and now they're likely not going to win them this time. They may win some of the ones that I just mentioned, some of them, but certainly not all of them, certainly not many of them. And there's other ridings I can name, but you got the point. Here, locally, it's more of the orange and blue flip, or the orange and red flip, I should say. Whereas ridings the Liberals won federally have been won by the NDP locally. And I'm just going to take this time right now, speaking of the local situation here in London, to make my official predictions. I've been saying that London West, London Fanshawe, and Elgin Middlesex London are unlikely to change hands throughout this campaign. I stand by that. I think that'd be a shocking result for me tomorrow if any of those ridings changed hands. London West could have been close. I think Paul Pilato is a good candidate. But for that riding to be close, you needed someone with the Liberals that was going to draw a bunch of Peggy Sattler's votes. Peggy Sattler got 55% of the votes 4 years ago. I don't think she's going to get that this time. But you need to draw a lot of Peggy Sattler's votes that were ungettable for a conservative candidate, and you needed those votes to go to the Liberals. That's not going to happen. London Fanshawe remains an NDP stronghold. The less said about that, the better. And London North Centre, I'm going to say Terence Kernaghan keeps his seat. I will say the Liberals and Kate Graham's campaign make it close. They have worked hard. It's been a good local campaign, I think. But Terrence Kernahan's going to keep that seat. Getting out a non-government incumbent is a tough road to hoe. And I think Jerry Pribble and Kate Graham and their teams have both run good campaigns. But I think that Terrence Kernahan winds up keeping that seat. And then Elgin, Middlesex, London, quick, easy, in out. Rob Flack's going to win. Takes over for Jeff Yurick. So there are the local predictions. We'll see how right I am tomorrow night at, I don't know, early to or mid-evening when we start getting some finalized numbers here. But those are the predictions, and I feel pretty confident in those. I feel pretty good about saying those things. My province-wide prediction shouldn't shock anyone. It's going to be a Ford majority again. And if you don't like that, and maybe you don't, maybe you think that the province of Ontario is making a huge mistake, I will say to you that you should perhaps be more angry with the leaders and the leadership of the opposition parties than you are with voters in the province of Ontario. Just they have not run as good a campaign as the Progressive Conservative Party of Ontario has. The Ford campaign, while they had a small degree of difficulty, I'll acknowledge, had a plan, and they stuck to it. And the plan is, hey, try to stay out of the news. And they've successfully done that. They have stayed out of the news. And that's what they wanted. They just wanted this to be a nice, easy campaign. Nothing but rallies, no controversies, no rocking the boat, because why would you? Because you're up by a whole bunch. And that's what they've done, and they successfully pulled that off. And that's harder to do than you would think, to be clear. But this is basically like a team that started a hockey game up 3-0 and has played defense the rest of the game, and the opposition is yet to score. So, again, starting a hockey game up 3-0 means that you're in an easier spot and more likely to win it, but you still got to play defense for 60 minutes, and that's what they've done. They haven't made any mistakes, and you got to give them credit for that. I think you should. So, that's what's going to happen. The four conservatives will be reelected with a majority government, and they'll be the government for 4 years. Then we'll see. Who knows what the next 4 years is like, but that's the situation we're going to be in. If you don't like that because you don't like the way that the Ford government handled the pandemic, fair enough. Neither do I. But I'll ask you this. Why weren't Stephen Del Duca and Andrea Horvath talking about that? And the answer, I believe, lies in a poll. And this is a poll that was published today. Well, it might have been early in the week. But nonetheless, this is information that I suspect to you that the Democrats and the Liberals absolutely had. Here's what Abaca's data had when it comes to how this government handled the COVID-19 pandemic. 33% of voters in this province said the way they handled it was what made it more likely that they would vote for Ford and the Conservatives. 33% positive. Over at the doesn't impact my choice, 36%. What about making it less likely to vote PC? 31%. So about 2/3 of the voters, a little more than that, had decided that the handling of the COVID-19 pandemic, A, had no impact on their choice, or B, made it more likely to vote conservative. So if you're the Del Ducas and the Horvaths of the world, you're thinking to yourself, I'm already preaching to the converted if I'm talking about COVID-19. So therefore, why am I going to make this election issue? So I understand why they didn't, but I thought that was the Ford government's weakest issue coming in. The electorate didn't seem to think it was all that bad. And again, you may not love that. That might make your blood boil, to be honest. But it doesn't make it any less true. The Ford conservatives ran a very centrist campaign. Yeah, there's a little populism stuff here and there. But they ran a very centrist campaign. And I'll tell you this. No leader in the province of Ontario is more liked than Doug Ford, just based on not just the Abacus polling I was talking about earlier, But the polling we've seen in general through the election, his positives outweigh his negatives. That's not the case for Horvath. Certainly not the case for Del Duca. It is the case for Schreiner. But that's a little bit different. So, if Ford and Schreiner are the two most liked leaders, Ford's probably going to win. If you have the premier who was considered the most liked leader of the three with parties that have multiple seats at Queen's Park, which the Progressive Conservatives had, it is very, very, very difficult to lose an election. If you're a one-term incumbent government and people like your leader, you're going to get back in. And again, you may not love the way that the electorate feels about Doug Ford. Okay, fine. You don't like it. Doesn't make it any less true. And I think he deserves some credit for altering his image for the purpose of the campaign. That's, again, not easy to do. Remember, and this may have been a mistake by him, but remember in 2019, Andrew Scheer essentially said to Doug Ford, "Dude, I want to be prime minister. Stay out of sight. I don't want to hear from you. I don't want to see you. I want you to disappear during the election campaign." This is what Andrew Scheer and the Federal Conservatives said to Doug Ford, because they did not want Ford and Scheer to be associated on the campaign trail in Toronto and elsewhere in Ontario. And I'll tell you right now, that decision, like the vast majority of Andrew Scheer's milquetoast conservative leadership, that decision is aging poorly. Really poorly. And if I were Doug Ford, I'm feeling pretty good about myself today that, hey, you guys wanted to keep me out of sight during an election that you lost. And a lot of those seats that you didn't win, I'm about to deliver again. Again. If I were Doug Ford, I'd feel pretty good about that today. So there's my thoughts on the way this election has gone, the way this election is shut down. We'll see what the next Ford government looks like, because that's what it's going to be. But I want to talk about another aspect of why this has become the government. There's been a misconception out there that, well, it's rural ridings that have done this. We talked earlier about, hey, the 905 decides these elections. I'll tell you where it doesn't decide these elections is Oxford County or Lambton, Kent, Middlesex. Kelly Elliott, the deputy mayor at Thames Center, had a Twitter thread about this, and I want to talk about that with her. We're going to do that right after this here on the Craig Needles Podcast, which, of course, is brought to you by our friends over at Lexus of London. Lifestyle with a drive. Your new Lexus is patiently waiting at Lexus of London. Luxury redefined. Choose yours today at the award-winning Lexus of London, 1065 Warrencliffe Road South, and online at lexusoflondon.com. And we continue here on the Craig Needles Podcast. And I mentioned it earlier that we were going to be talking with Kelly Elliott, who's the deputy mayor of Thames Center, just about the urban-rural divide. And there were some Twitter doctors who now believe that they are election strategists or pollsters. That's one of the trends from the pandemic that has annoyed me a little bit, is Twitter doctors now think they're an expert in a lot of things. Not all of them, but some of them. Either way, there was a tweet sent out that Kelly disagreed with, and the numbers are on Kelly's side, and I wanted to ask her about that here as we get ready for an election tomorrow here on the Craig Needles Podcast. Kelly, thank you so much for doing this. Appreciate it.
Oh, thanks for having me.
So the tweet essentially said, hey, I need people in rural Ontario to get it together and stop electing Doug Ford, which ignores a lot of things that are quite obvious. Specifically, the numbers of seats in quote-unquote rural Ontario are significantly less than the seats that are in quote-unquote urban Ontario. But also, and this is the part of the Twitter thread that you did that I thought was most interesting, is the quote-unquote progressive parties, and I don't like using that terminology, but the NDP, the Liberals, and to a lesser extent the Greens actually have some stuff in the platform, they haven't really done anything that would make them, their parties and their platforms, appeal to rural voters, or at least not enough. Is that fair to say?
I think that's absolutely fair to say. I think a lot of real issues have been left behind in this election. And you know, what we've talked about before is the fact that, you know, rural ridings, there's very few of them. They don't matter in the grand scheme of things to win an election. Urban issues and urban ridings are what win elections. And so we are kind of left at the point where, you know, rural issues haven't been at the forefront. As you mentioned, the Green Party, they do have an entire section actually dedicated to agriculture, which is both surprising and well received, I think. But for the most part, it's been left behind in the NDP's and Liberals' platforms for sure.
So that being the case, then what could you expect from rural voters? Because the Progressive Conservatives are the ones saying, "Hey, we're going to help you out with this." Or in the case of the Liberals in 2018, if the Progressive Conservatives are not the ones saying, "Oh yeah, we're just going to run roughshod over you a little bit here and build our high speed rail. Sorry about whatever happens to your land or whatever happens to your roads." What else would you expect from quote unquote rural voters for them to say, "Yeah, you know what, we're probably not going to vote for this."
Well, and I think that's just it, you know, and I went in a lot of tweets where I talked about the fact that the PCs have really in the past marketed themselves as the rural ridings, that they know the issues, that they support the rural communities. And in the past, they have. And, you know, we went 15 years of a Liberal government who didn't put rural priorities at the forefront. And a matter of fact, they completely ignored them and went even further. You know, you use high-speed rail as the perfect example to what happened to rural communities under the Liberal government. And before that, you know, agriculture was a huge priority, and PCs in power showed that. And so during those 15 years, the PCs as opposition always showed that they were fighting for rural communities. But in my opinion, what happened in 2018 is what happens a lot of times. You realize you don't need the ridings to win elections, and so they don't need to be the priority. And so where are rural communities? In my opinion, I'm not really sure. I don't think we have a party that really is standing up for rural Ontario, and that's really unfortunate for rural ridings. So where that leads in the polls, I'm not sure. Do rural ridings give the PCs another chance to make them a priority? Maybe. But as we mentioned before, the Liberals and the NDP haven't shown that they're even willing to do that if they were elected. So does that deserve a vote? I don't know.
Yeah, and like the Conservatives are going to do very well in rural ridings, if only because the incumbency advantage is there. But I'll read you the numbers that I tweeted yesterday. I sent these to you as well. There are 33 ridings in Ontario that voted Conservative both in the 2018 provincial election and the 2021 federal election. 33. Now, some of those are wealthier urban ridings. So about 30 is what I would call rural, but someone's definition of rural might change there. There are 41 ridings where a Trudeau Liberal won in 2021 that a Ford Conservative won in 2018. 41. So that to me is the story right there is, hey, why are these, and this is essentially the way it comes off, and I'm sure that you felt this way too. Hey, why are these Hicks electing Ford all the time? Like, oh, wait a minute. Unless Hicks are people that are living in Mississauga and Brampton and Burlington and Milton, maybe we should be looking at the folks that are electing Ford over there if we want to be mad about this. You know what I mean? I had a very, very hard time with, it's your fault, specific group of voters, that this went the way that it did. I have a very hard time with that, and the numbers don't stand up for it either.
Well, exactly. And I felt the same way, Craig. You know, our seven ridings in rural Ontario did not decipher those elections. And so to put the blame that it's rural Ontario that is putting Ford in, I think is very deceitful. And just to the fact of that is, you know, the tweet in question is very much that it was rural Ontario by voting Conservatives doesn't care about the rest of Ontario. And I think that is also very deceitful in the fact that, you know, as much as, you know, people in rural communities vote for their PC candidate, that doesn't mean everybody is. It also doesn't mean that everybody's going out to vote. And so to paint that brush stroke that everybody in rural Ontario doesn't care about the rest of Ontario. You know, it's a way bigger picture than that. And there's so many issues that play. It's not that simple.
Yeah, it's certainly not. It's not even close to that simple. And here's the thing. Like, there, I would suspect that there are some people in Lambton, Kent, Middlesex right now, if they're listening to this podcast, saying, oh, yeah, I'm voting for Monty McNaughton again. I feel he's very responsive to my concerns and a very responsive MPP. And who might argue? I'm sure that's true. So, you know what I mean? Like, it's just, like, sometimes, even if you may not love all the things their party does politically, sometimes people are just popular in their ridings and they're going to get reelected. Do you think Monty McNaughton's going to lose Lambton, Kent, Middlesex? I don't think that's very likely. You know, like, it's, oh, it just is, it's an oversimplification.
And let's just add to that, that the Liberals aren't even running a candidate in Lambton, Kent, yeah. Middlesex. And so if you're not even going to run a candidate and you're not even going to try to win a riding, you know, you can't put the blame on voters then when parties like the Liberals and the NDP aren't running candidates, or they aren't even running good candidates, or if they are running a candidate, aren't putting resources or support into those candidates in order to win those ridings. So you can't put the blame on voters when the parties aren't doing their job either.
And that's what I come back to. For me, this is the story of the entire election in a nutshell, what you just said in one sentence. You can't put the blame on voters if the parties aren't doing their job either. And in this case, I'm talking about the Liberals and the Democrats. Hey, well, why didn't they get a chance to form government? I think they've run lousy campaigns. Like, how's that for the reason why they don't get to be in government? You know, like, it's hard to knock off a one-term incumbent government. Even more difficult if you're trying to do that and not running a very effective campaign, in my opinion. I think in the opinion of a lot of observers, too, who are honest and neutral about this. I'm not talking about, like, on the ground in a specific riding. I'm talking about the province-wide campaigns. Do you feel the same way?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And it goes down to what I said before, you know, if you're not going to put rural issues at the forefront, you're not going to win rural ridings. It's as simple as that.
Yeah. No, well, that's very much the case. Well, we'll leave it there just because I know you've got things to do and I've got things to do. I'm going to get an episode out because we've got T-minus, 32 hours until they start counting some votes here. So, Kelly, anything else you want to add or stands out about sort of the way this campaign has gone or perhaps how it's gone in rural ridings before we wrap up the conversation here?
Yeah, you know what? I'm really interested to see how some of the rural ridings play out. I think, you know, it's pretty safe to say that they will probably end up all PC at the end of the day. But to see how many votes go away from PCs to other parties, I think that's going to be interesting to watch.
Yeah, I'm interested. You know, the one I'm interested in the most is Perry Sound Muskoka, where the Liberals are, again, not running a candidate. The Greens and the PCs are neck and neck there. Like, you know, you mentioned the Greens have some stuff on the platform. Is this something that perhaps starts a trend? Are there going to be some people in rural riding say, hey, we're going to give the Greens a chance? And we'll see what happens in Perry Sound Muskoka. But I'm interested in that one, as I said.
Yeah, absolutely. I am. I'll be watching that one closely.
Yeah. Well, it's going to be a fun night tomorrow night. Kelly, thank you so much for doing this. Always appreciate the time and the conversation. We'll talk to you soon, okay?
Sounds good. Thanks, Craig.
It's all the time we have here on the Craig Needles Podcast today. The Craig Needles Podcast, of course, is brought to you by our friends over at Lexus of London. Lifestyle with the drive. Your new Lexus is patiently waiting for you at Lexus of London, 1065 Warncliffe Road South, or online at lexusoflondon.com.
The Craig Needles Podcast is a presentation of the Blackburn Media Podcast Network.